I'm Robin Lustig, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In Washington, New York and New Jersey, new terror alerts, new heightened levels of security. But the information from Pakistan that led to these new alerts being issued is said to be at least 3 years old. President Bush says that the American people need to know that the intelligence gathering is doing its job, that by sharing intelligence we can better prepare in case something were to happen. We've learned a lot since 9/11 about how Al-Qaeda goes about its business. We're also learning how hard it is to confront the threat. We'll be discussing the intelligence and the response to it this hour. We also want to know what you think. Was the administration right to share what it knows? Is it information that Americans have a right to know? What are you meant to do with the information? Do you think maybe the White House is trying to cover its back in this election year? How much do you feel you know about the true nature of the threat? How confident are you that Homeland Security is up to the task of dealing with it? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests this hour are Larry Johnson, who served as Deputy Director in the Office of Counterterrorism at the State Department under Presidents George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton. He joins us today from Washington, D.C. And Lawrence Wright, a staff writer with the New Yorker magazine, who's written extensively about Al-Qaeda, most recently about the train bombings in Madrid last March. He joins us from Austin, Texas. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for joining us on the show today.
Good morning.
It's a pleasure.
Good morning. Now, Larry Johnson, let's come to you first of all. What do you make of the way the administration has handled this information?
I would say that they have mishandled the information. Now that we know, I had heard initially that it was as old as 3 years old. Now that that is pretty well confirmed, there really is no justification for this kind of hysterical public warning. And because they say that the specific information, it just shows that they don't understand how to handle intelligence.
You think they should have said nothing?
Yes, because the standard ought to be that if you've got specific, credible information and you cannot prevent the attack, then you go public, because you have to be able to tell people something specifically that they can do to assist you with preventing this threat. But instead, we still wind up with one more. Well, there's specific information. Be afraid, but go ahead about your normal business.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to get this clear. You are saying that because the information appears to be several years old, it is no longer relevant today?
It's not relevant today from the standpoint of showing that there's actually an imminent attack. You know, if you have a blueprint laying around your house of your dream home that you would like to build, that doesn't mean that you're going to build it. You know, now, if you show me that you've gone out and got a loan to buy land, that you've hired an architect to take those drawings to the next level, that you're starting to buy building materials, then I know that you're serious about doing that. But in fact, if we've been properly monitoring what's been going on, the reason we have this information is because there have been arrests and disruptions of the Al-Qaeda network. It's not just in Pakistan. It's been in Saudi Arabia. It's been in Great Britain. So on the one hand, we're actually making some strides forward in taking the bad guys off the street. But yet the Bush administration continues, I think, to unfortunately release threat warnings in a very dire manner when it just coincides with some other political events.
Okay, well, there are a number of points there I'd love to take up with you, but let's just go to Lawrence Wright first of all. Lawrence Wright, what do you make of the way in which the administration has handled this?
I think that the traumas that the intelligence agencies suffered because of the failures of 9/11 have led to this kind of overreaction since then. They don't want to be caught with their pants down again, so they are constantly making these leaps of faith and suppositions based on inadequate or piecemeal evidence. And let's take the example, you know, this recent example. Yes, this information's old. They put it together with some recent information that there might be some terrorists coming through Mexico. And indeed, they arrested a woman, a Pakistani woman, who was carrying a South African passport with some pages ripped out of it recently. That all goes together in their mind to say that these actions may be realized during this very heated political season based on the experience in Madrid. So this is all this supposition goes together to create this decision to make an alert. They're trying to do the things that that weren't done before 9/11, and unfortunately, we see the weakness in that response as well.
You wrote in your most recent piece in the New Yorker regarding the Madrid attacks. You wrote in some detail about the way in which the attackers use computers, use the internet, use electronic communication. This is now absolutely crucial to their operations, is it not? And it could be argued that when the intelligence agencies get access to some of that information, that is really useful to them.
Oh, there's no question that it's useful, except that it's difficult to know what to make of it. When you're on the internet, you're anonymous. And when people are posting warnings, and take the example of the Abu Hafs al-Masri Brigade, which is constantly entering threats against Europe or the United States, and but they also took credit for the blackouts that had in summer ago, which had nothing to do with terrorism. So we don't know who they are. Sometimes we do. I mean, there is definitely an intersection between the people that are operating on the internet and the terrorists. Recently, 2 weeks ago in Saudi Arabia, one of the editors of Salt al-Jihad was killed in a shootout. And he was, you know, there was definitely a connection between the internet presence and the real presence on the ground in Saudi Arabia. But a lot of times you have this information. It could be some lonely teenager in the south of France, or it could be a real live jihadi who's sending out broadcasts to his cohorts and urging them to action.
Larry Johnson, you say that you believe the administration should not have said anything publicly about this information that it acquired from Pakistan. Just
Correct.
Suppose that later this week there were to be an attack on the World Bank headquarters in Washington, the IMF headquarters in Washington. It then emerged later at some kind of inquiry that this information had indeed been in the hands of the administration. Would they not then be roundly criticized for having kept it to themselves?
Not necessarily. It depends on what they did with the information. I'm not saying that they, just because they have the information, they keep it quiet and do nothing. I think there's a lot of things that should be done behind the scenes. You know, one of the reasons we had 9/11 was the fact that you had information at the Central Intelligence Agency and information with the FBI that was not being shared, was not being put together. Unfortunately, I know for a fact that even today in a critical place overseas in Afghanistan, FBI and CIA are fighting with each other. There was a meeting about 6 weeks ago in which a CIA person, a group of CIA people were meeting with military people, and in the midst of that walks an FBI agent. And the CIA person stands up and says, we're not having this meeting if that person's here. We cannot prevent terrorism if the FBI and the CIA are not talking to each other and sharing information. And yet to go out and provide this alert to the American people, and when at the end of the day, what are they supposed to do different than they're doing yesterday? And the answer is nothing. So my attitude is give them information that they can do something with.
So you then place emphasis on what the administration does more than on what it says publicly. But
yes,
the extension to that, though, is that if people see on the streets that something has changed, they see more armed police officers, they see heightened security, and nothing has been said, then they get scared.
Okay, but here's the problem we've got. You know, right now they've stopped letting trucks into New York City,
right,
or they're making it very difficult for trucks to get into New York City. Within 3 to 4 weeks, they'll stop doing that. Trucks, everything will be back to normal. These checkpoints will be taken down. Now, it's not going to be taken down because we suddenly have new intelligence that all the bad guys have disappeared. What they're dealing with is this unknown. But I factor into that unknown. I said, are we making any progress in arresting and apprehending Al-Qaeda operatives, or are we having trouble finding them? The answer is the former. We've been having success in finding them. I don't know of any organization in the world that you can take out members and leaders, incarcerate them or kill them, and then that organization continues to function as well as it did before.
Lawrence Wright, let me just get your take on the age of this information that's come from Pakistan, apparently. It is said to be 3, perhaps 4 years old, and yet I think I'm right in saying that the work you did on what lay behind the Madrid attacks shows that those kinds of attacks are many years in the planning.
Right. It seems that the Madrid bombings were planned before 9/11, or at least in the early planning stages. There was a lot of planning going on during that period. Surveillance, there's a videotape, for instance, that has been entered into evidence in Spain. Someone surveilling the bridges in the Brooklyn Bridge, the World Trade Center, and so on, and talking about how they're going to be taken down. This was all done before 9/11. Sears Tower, Golden Gate Bridge, they've all been discussed. I think everybody's aware that iconic monuments are a target for al-Qaeda. And, I kind of disagree with Larry on the sense that I think information is always valuable, and it's good to release the information. It's a matter of how you disclose it. We want to walk a line between hysteria and caution. I think caution is, you know, something we should all be aware of, these threats, and maybe it helps to point out every once in a while that that we've discovered new information that indicates that the financial center or Citibank or something like that has been surveilled. If I were the president of Citibank or a customer, I'd like to be aware of that.
But looking at it through the eyes of potential attackers, is there a risk, do you think, that this kind of response to newly discovered information tells them things that are useful to them, tells them how the authorities plan to respond, how much the authorities know, what their state of preparedness is?
I think it does do that, and I also think, another worrisome feature of knowing those kinds of things is that they realize they can create a lot of disruption simply by fainting in one direction or another. If, for instance, this information had come out about subways rather than, you know, financial institutions, far bigger problem trying to cover the nation's subways or trains or buses.
So is it possible that they want the authorities to discover this information simply because they think that the information, whether true or not, is going to create disruption?
I think that that's perfectly plausible, and it might be a strategy. But that doesn't mean that the public shouldn't be aware of the threats. I think it helps to enlist people in this war on terrorism. You can't do clearly the police and intelligence agencies can't do it on their own. If it weren't for the fact that people were hyper alert, then we would have had, the Richard Reed case, for instance. There are people who are on an airplane and see somebody lighting up his shoe. Ordinarily you would think, this is just a weirdo, but, these people were hyper alert and they knew that, they should be on the watch for something, and they prevented what might have been a horrible disaster. So there are two sides of it, and they both have vast downsides.
So Larry Johnson, just maybe that is the response to your question, what are we meant to do with the information? Be alert, keep our eyes open. It's simple as that.
I mean, okay, we've known that since 9/11, so that's not new. Let me give you a couple of other aspects to this intelligence side. I first ran across this when I was working at the CIA and was an analyst for Central America and ran up against a general. We kept hearing coups about a particular country. When we tracked down who was responsible for the information on the coup, it was the very general who was trying to smoke out who his opposition was.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a moment. We're talking this hour about the terror alert. Does the recent discovery of information help you better understand the terrorist network? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. I'm Robin Lustig. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Robin Lustig, in for Dick Gordon. We're talking this hour about the terror network and what the recent alert means for Americans. My guests are Larry Johnson, former deputy director at the State Department's Office of Counterterrorism, and Lawrence Wright, staff writer at The New Yorker. His piece, The Terror Web, appeared in the August 2nd edition of the magazine. We're joined now on the line by David Heyman, who is the director of the Homeland Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. David Heyman, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
What is your view about the way in which this latest information out of Pakistan has been handled by the administration?
Well, I think it's a very interesting discussion at the top of the hour. I think one thing that everybody needs to understand, what Larry said up front, which is that this was target information. It was a case file, basically, of the vulnerabilities of particular buildings and perhaps some methods that might work for attacking them. It was not a plan. It was not an operational plan. We don't know of any operational plan for attack at this point. That's important because you have to ask yourself, well, what do you do with that once you find out that you have this information? And I think I would disagree a little bit with what Larry was saying early on about whether this is relevant or not, because it is 3 to 4 years old information. Al-Qaeda is a very patient organization. They have been known to eight years to come back to a target, in the case of the World Trade Center. As the other Larry said, Madrid was planned several years ago before 2001 as well. And so what we have now are these targets of opportunity, these sort of menu in which you could attack. After they've cased a joint, they then go into dormancy. There's a planning phase and eventually an operational attack. We don't know where they are right now with these case files. We don't know whether they're in dormancy or whether they're planning or whether they're not doing anything at all and whether these are just options for some later date. What we do know, and I think it probably hasn't been reported too much, is that it's not just 3 to 4 year old data, that they have been updated, these files, as recently as April and January of this year. And so what the administration had to do was to say, we don't know where they are in this phase of planning or non-planning, but we need to make sure we take protective measures in place. What the information they found, which was a treasure trove of information, showed significant vulnerabilities in our protective measures that we put in place for these buildings and perhaps other critical infrastructure. And so what they've done is they put protective measures in place immediately so that they could bridge the gap until they've updated those vulnerabilities.
Okay, that's what they do. That's what the security people do. But what do we do? What do the people who work in those buildings do? What do the people who walk past those buildings every day do? The general population, here is information, as you yourself say, we don't know what they were planning to do with this information, if anything. What do we do?
Well, the first thing is it's quite clear that we need to the information needs to be communicated. The risk needs to be communicated in an effective way. I think it's important to tell people that we've identified some vulnerabilities and we're fixing them, and that's why we've got some protective measures in place.
Even though we don't do anything with that information?
We did. You can see the stormtroopers outside of buildings, right?
Yeah, no, I mean we, the general public.
Well, the general public needs to, if you show up at work and there's enhanced security measures, you're going to get scared, as you said, and you're not going to know what's going on. And you need to be part of the solution. You also need to be vigilant. You need to be part of identifying perhaps suspicious activity. And you need to make your own judgments in terms of whether you feel it's safe or not and be part of the discussion with your organization as to alternative work plans, et cetera. And so I think we need to be patrimonial and say, we'll take care of you. We need to be all together on this, on solutions in terms of securing our society.
So is that really saying that we, the general public, have the right to know everything that the security people, the intelligence people pick up, the chatter, the emails, all of that, apart from things which very obviously and directly would jeopardize national security if it were to be released, everything else we have a right to know?
Well, it's not so stark. I mean, it's a balancing act. I think that this information, if you talk to folks in the intelligence community, is like nothing that they have seen in any instance before. In some instances, 24 years, somebody said, but and certainly since 9/11. And what it gave us was a view into their Al-Qaeda's tactics and methods and into our own vulnerabilities. It's that kind of information which says to us, well, this is what we know. We know that these are targets. What don't we know? We don't. What other targets are out there, and what other operations may be in place? And so, to disrupt those plans, if we've got no other tools, we better put new security measures in place, so as to throw off the operational tempo if something's in process right now.
Okay, but if I'm working at the World Bank, say, or at Citibank, and I hear what I'm told about what's been discovered in Pakistan, but I am told I'm still expected to go into work just as usual every day, in what way has that information helped me?
You will know first and foremost that there is a situation that has arisen where the government has recognized a vulnerability and that you are a target, as opposed to finding out by showing up at work. And if you want to make a decision not to go to work or to have alternative workplaces, you can do that. Second, we have to recognize today that this is the so-called new normalcy, that there will be threat information that comes up, that the government doesn't have all the answers, but that we do need to put new security in place. The government does put security in place, but that people have to understand that there are new risks, and we will have that the need to identify those risks and respond to them. It doesn't mean that individuals necessarily will be able to do something all the time, but they should have the ability to make judgments on their own.
Let me put that back to you, Larry Johnson. It is information which the government has and which we have the right to know.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's an opinion. And I guess in my experience, what I've seen is that the one of the problems you get with intelligence, and we've seen it even in the 9/11 reports, that certain claims that have been made by even by people in custody later turn out to have been misinformation or wrong. The other danger is when the information is put out, it does tip your hand to the other side what you're doing. And still, at the end of the day, respectfully disagree with David that what this information showed is vulnerabilities. What they are, you know, they've done a casing of the joint. There is, to my knowledge, been no assessment of whether they said that they were, in fact, vulnerable to attack. Because one of the things when you do conduct casing, and we've seen this over and over in a variety of ways, that people will case a joint and then they come back and say, well, we don't think we can attack that. In fact, you saw this fellow who was an Al-Qaeda member or had at least been a sympathizer from Ohio who was supposed to attack the Brooklyn Bridge. And he went and cased the Brooklyn Bridge and came back and said, no, it's going to be too difficult. So just the fact that the casing's going on, I'm not disagreeing with that. But, you know, the other element here is it is true that prior to 9/11 that the Al-Qaeda's plan had been in the works for a while. But what has changed is that unlike prior to 9/11, when Al-Qaeda was basically left alone, when they were allowed to have training camps, when recruits were able to go through those, when they were able to move funds and personnel without much interference, that has not been the case since 9/11. And in fact, significant portions of Al-Qaeda have been killed or are in custody. And in this most recent information as well, comes out of effective counterterrorist operations. So that's why I say when we do the analysis on it, the fear factor is always, I guess, the most comforting, because you can always say, you know, they're going to get us. But, you know, I think, frankly, we've had a little more success over the last couple of years than we're taking credit for.
Okay.
I think there's a context here which I don't disagree with everything that Larry says. one of the things that's important to recognize is the context at which this is taking place. There's a so-called Madrid syndrome right now, where after the Madrid attacks, the administration, Condi Rice, came out immediately and said, you know, these guys want to disrupt our elections in the U.S. and perhaps elsewhere. And there's this concern, a very serious concern, that an attack prior to an election is imminent. And so, as you know, Ridge and others have basically stated that there are a number of perhaps so-called targets of opportunity, places which might be attacked between now and the election. And as we go past each of them, the other ones become, from their perspective, perhaps the pressure gets greater that something might happen. And so I think, Larry, you're right in the sense that there is an intense feeling right now that this could be it. Maybe this is it. And so perhaps in some instances we tend to overreact. Communication is critically important in this, and I think how we communicate to the public what's going on needs to improve.
Okay, let's bring a listener in at this point. Jack is on the line from Greensboro in North Carolina. Jack, hi.
How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Now, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, my thoughts are Thomas Jefferson, one of the founding fathers of the country, wrote that the best defense against a tyrannical government was an informed populace. And my understanding is of the Constitution, Bill of Rights, that the only function of the federal government is to protect us from, bad people within and without outside of our borders. And it seems to me like the federal government has failed miserably, like in catching Eric Rudolph up in North Carolina Mountains. He ran loose for about 3 or 4 years. He was an 11-month, deputy sheriff. He's going to force 11 months, caught him. The Unabomber was turned in by his brother. Richard Reed was caught by a citizen, and the Beltway sniper was turned in by a trucker.
But, Jack, is the government doing its duty in helping to protect the citizenry by informing the citizens of what it knows about potential threats?
Yes, well, you know, as long as we're getting the truth and not, you know, a bunch of hype or you know, chatter, but everybody needs to know, be aware of what's going on around them, and everybody also should be armed and prepared, you know, for people of this nature. If people in that airplane that legally had weapons, they pull out razor knives, it'd been like, you know, there'd been no use because they'd have been taken down before it even started.
Well, there's an argument about how effective firearms might be on an aircraft, but just leaving that to one side for a moment, do you feel safer yourself as a citizen knowing what the government has just revealed to you over the past couple of days about what they have found in Pakistan?
After the history of what's been going on, I don't feel any safer. The only way I feel safer is being aware of my surroundings, who's around me, and being an armed citizen.
Okay, Jack, thanks for that. Lawrence Wright, let me come back to you on this. There are a group of people out there who are, it would appear from the information that's been revealed, looking at potential targets, or certainly they were looking at potential targets. Do you believe that that is clearly designed to lay the path for future attacks?
Well, they've got the documents, but they don't have the people that were supposed to carry them out. And, you know, these are old plans. It could be that whoever was, whatever sleeper cell there might have been in the U.S. To enact these ideas was disrupted or arrested after the 9/11 sweeps. It could be that they are still underground and haven't emerged. We don't know. That kind of information, you know, we haven't gotten. So, you know, am I worried about seeing these plans be enacted? I am. But, you know, the things that worry me more now are not the kind of centralized al-Qaeda operations like 9/11 or the embassy bombings, but more spontaneous imitation things like Madrid, which are, you know, less coherent maybe, but still deadly, and only tangentially involved with al-Qaeda and maybe not operating under anybody's direction.
And how relevant do you think it is that the Madrid attacks came just before an election, that here, of course, we are in a pre-election period? Do you think that that does make the U.S. more vulnerable at this time?
I think that, you know, there would be a lot of a lot of people that would like to disrupt the elections and make a big show, and certainly al-Qaeda has always enjoyed the kind of spectacular. That's maybe a weakness in that organization, is that they like to go for the really big targets, and they've neglected some, you know, just to attack the easiest things. The Madrid syndrome that David was talking about is interesting because immediately the American government got very anxious about it, even though there was nothing on the internet, no real chatter to say that the American elections were being targeted. And if you look back at the way the Spanish government handled those bombings, one would have to say no one could predict that those train bombs would have resulted in the overthrow of the Spanish government had the Spanish government properly handled. It could have resulted in a unifying of the electorate in favor of the government. But the really careless and perhaps mendacious handling of the information from the government itself was the cause of the government's defeat, not the bomb per se.
David
Heyman, yeah.
Yeah, that's a point that I think is really interesting, and I actually would like to hear both Larry and Lawrence's thought on the idea that how serious is this election theory? I can't imagine that there is a legitimate analysis out there that says that an attack prior to the election will influence the election one way or the other. I can't imagine that al-Qaeda's run through it. Every campaign right now is running through those options, and there are not – there is no consensus view of that, and so the notion that al-Qaeda is timing something with the election seems to me, you know, highly improbable. They are going to do it on their own operational tempo to coincide with when targets of opportunity exist and that they can make the maximum effect. And so this whole notion of running up to an election seems a bit uncertain.
Well, Larry Johnson, let's get your take on that.
No, I agree with David. I mean, one of the, we got a lot of these myths out there that, you know, terrorists like to hit at holidays. And yet, you know, I defy anybody to go back the last 40 years and list the number of terrorist incidents we've had on any major holiday. You're not going to find any. And I think Lawrence made the exactly correct point. It wasn't a referendum on terrorism in Spain. It was a referendum on the fact that the government completely bollocksed it, because initially they claimed it was ETA. Instead of, you know, they jumped immediately to a conclusion instead of going out and appearing to be honest with their people. So I think it was that that did them in, and I think Lawrence is exactly right. They could have used that as an opportunity to unify, and instead, through their own sheer incompetence, they turned it into a coup for the terrorists.
But you do not believe, Larry, that part of the thinking of these people is to seek to time their attacks in such a way as to influence the outcome of an election?
No, no.
How would it influence the election? I'm not quite sure how it would. How would you make a judgment that an explosion or something, an attack, whatever time it is before an election, would in fact influence the election one way or the other?
I mean, David's right. Is like, you know, is the terrorist attack, does that mean you vote for George Bush or for John Kerry? I think one of the dangers we have sometimes is it is true that Al-Qaeda has carried out some fairly sophisticated operations. But yet, if you go through and read the 9/11 report, you also get the other picture that, you know, these guys are still human beings subject to their own weaknesses. And you find the Saudis and the Egyptians fighting with each other over, you know, who's preeminent. And the only thing they agree upon is they're better than everybody else. So they have fights over money. So they get caught up with a lot of the pettiness that will always crop up when human beings get together and try to organize themselves. So I think we need to avoid investing these guys with the status of being some sort of James Bond.
Okay, stay with us. David Heyman at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining us for this segment of the program. Larry Johnson, Lawrence Wright, stay with us, please. We'll be back in just a moment. Decoding intelligence and security, that's what we're talking about this hour. Do you better understand how terrorists operate? 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection. This hour, we're talking about the terrorist network and what the recent alert means for Americans. My guests are Larry Johnson, former deputy director at the Office of Counterterrorism at the State Department, and Lawrence Wright, a staff writer at The New Yorker magazine. We'll go to the phones now. Michelle is on the line from Raleigh in North Carolina. Hello, Michelle.
Hello. My only concern with them raising the alert level like they do, and of course this may have been politically motivated, I'm not sure, but the downside to this is the cry wolf factor, as I like to call it. The Americans are going to gear up, they're going to look around, and nothing's going to happen, and then everybody's going to go back to their complacency again and just doing their day-to-day lives. And then something's going to really come out, and real credible information about something, you know, a bomb or something, and all the Americans are going to go, oh, well, we've been through this before, and nothing ever happens. So I think there could be a complacency issue that we may have to deal with.
And do you think we're already getting to that point? Do you think that people already now are at a stage where they hear one of these new alerts and they simply shrug their shoulders?
Well, I think so. I do. We do have family and friends up in New York, and a lot of them are like, well, you know, we've been down this path before. Nothing ever happens. And like Larry had mentioned earlier, they're going to keep the barricades up. They're going to keep the high security, and then they're going to take everything down. And then when we have our guard dropped, that's when the terrorists hit us. They never hit us at big public events and on elections, because that's when we have all the security out and everybody's doing their thing. But it's when we drop our guard that's when they hit us. So them raising the terrorist alert level at every whim, or whether it be politically motivated or not, I think only is going to deteriorate the actual threat level itself.
But Larry Johnson, you do have a problem there, don't you? Because by the very nature of these things, you never know whether a terror alert has in fact averted a terrorist attack.
Well, yeah, actually you do when you're on the inside. I mean, look, I've been in the position of having to issue warnings before, and it was there when this whole issue came up of what did the U.S. government know and when did it know it. I think your caller made the exact correct point. we're going to get a fatigue factor. You know, recall that in December of 2003 into January of 2004, we had, quote, the most serious threat since 9/11 that came and it went with nothing. And then about 6 weeks ago, we were told again, the most serious threat since 9/11, nothing. My concern is the same as the caller's, that there really are wolves out there. So I'm not accusing the administration of making up intelligence. But what I am saying is that you've got to handle it in such a way that you don't squander your credibility with the American public. And I use as my barometer on this Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. And last night he had one of the funniest bits, but it's like, you know, they're starting to make fun of Tom Ridge for, you know, scaring people without any delivering the goods. And when you lose your credibility in this town, that's not a good thing.
Lawrence Wright, clearly the Homeland Security people have to adapt their criteria. They have to keep refining their techniques, looking at how they go about their business. Presumably, the people on the other side of this fight do exactly the same thing. I know you've spent a lot of time analyzing how they go about their business. Are they changing all the time as well?
Well, yeah. Al-Qaeda, or whatever you want to call it, is in a constant state of evolution and flux. The original group, Bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri, still alive, still operating, however dispersed and disorganized, but they have begun to regroup. And for instance, after the arrest of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, they replaced him with a guy named Abu Faraj, and so they've begun to reappoint people to fill the spots that have been eliminated by death or capture.
But they don't still have training camps in Afghanistan, do they?
No, but they may have some training camps in other places in the world, but the real training camp is on the Internet now. That's where, now there are thousands of websites that are devoted to jihad. And anything you want to know is anything you might have learned in Afghanistan, you can pick up on the net. There's, for instance, this Al-Batar website, which has, everything from diet and fitness stories to, how to fire a rocket-propelled grenade. And every week they have a new issue of it. There are three or four such jihadi magazines on the net, thousands of sites. And if you just go, as I did recently, to Yahoo Groups and type in jihad, I got 193 different groups registered under that name.
But I'm curious I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just thinking aloud, these websites, is it not possible to take them down? Is it not possible to block them, to get rid of them?
Oh, it's possible, but they're constantly eluding capture. But sometimes they change their site every day, sometimes every hour.
Every day?
Sometimes every hour. And you will have, for instance, the original Al-Qaeda site, alneda.net, was taken over by a pornographer in America. there's a kind of freelance hacker network that's at war with these, as well as American and other intelligence agencies that are constantly hunting for them. I was in Pakistan recently, and a reporter there for Abu Dhabi TV showed me how he was able to log on to these things. He would get an email each day with a link, and it would take him to alfaruq.net, which was one of the official Qaeda sites. And he could tell its originality because it had a white stallion prancing across the screen. That's a kind of Qaeda logo. But, there's a proliferation of these kinds of sites on the net, and I think that it has empowered a lot of imitators to feel like they're participating in this jihad, who may never have gone to Bosnia or Afghanistan, but they now have been authorized to act in the name of Al-Qaeda.
So there, Larry Johnson, we have a very graphic picture of how the attackers have changed their mode of operation. The intelligence gathering people have to adapt accordingly, don't they? They presumably have changed a great deal as well over the past 2-3 years.
I wouldn't be so confident. I would hope you're correct, but from just friends and other things that I know, it's not quite that easy. I don't dispute at all that they're trying to use the internet to pass information. However, if they're training for explosives over the internet, God bless them, keep it up, because they're more likely going to kill themselves before they kill anybody else. The problem with, you know, when you are trained with firearms and explosives, it's something you have to get out and get hands-on and learn how to use it. And it's some kind of thing you have to do with repetition, because it's not quite like getting on a bike. There are certain things that you can forget that can end up killing you later. So you need to go after that. I think one of the real gaps we face today is the fact that Pakistan has not been fully cooperating in going after the strongholds that are along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border, where likely bin Laden, Zawahiri, and other elements are still hiding out. And as long as that rat's nest continues, I think, you know, there is a threat. And please understand, I'm not saying that there is no threat. Mm-hmm. My issue is I think there are things we should be doing behind the scenes, out of the glare of public light, that will be more effective in disrupting and dismantling those organizations. You know, I'm a big believer in the sucker punch. You know, I don't want to stand up and square off with Marcus of Queensberry rules face to face. I'd rather hit these guys and ambush them so they don't know what's coming.
I'm just wondering whether post 9/11, the political reality is that governments now are expected to share far more of this information with the voters, with the public, than perhaps used to be the case.
There's always that pressure. Look, I was around for the Pan Am 103 mm-hmm. event, where it was perceived that the U.S. government had information that it told only its employees and didn't tell the average person. And that was not true. However, that did lead to the pressure that of going with public notification. And the criteria was if you had specific, credible information and you couldn't prevent the attack, or better said, that if you as a government employee were going to use that information to change your behavior, then the American people should have access to that. I fully agree with that as a standard. Because if you've got information that there's going to be a bomb someplace possibly and you're going to tell your family don't go there, then I think every American ought to have the right to be able to tell their families, don't go there. But that's not the kind of information we're getting right now. We're getting, well, be careful out there, but please go to work.
Okay, let's talk.
I think part of the problem has to do with this threat level thing, that if the information is simply released, you know, without having some lever that says, ooh, we're moving into orange here, then, I think it's possible to modulate that information, but it's not so easy to do that when you are notching up the terror threat level. And every time that threat level moves up, it costs $1 billion a day in, you know, overtime and security and all that sort of thing. It's a very expensive maneuver. So I'd be willing to see the whole threat level thing taken out of our conversation and removed from the Homeland Security. Just say, you know, what is the news? What is a threat? Not say we're scared to death. We've moved it up another notch.
Okay, let's hear from Linda, who's here in Boston. Hi, Linda. Do you feel that you are beginning to learn more about the nature of the threat?
Well, what I'm concerned about is basically they tell us about the threat, and I'm wondering why the financial centers weren't protected in the first place. If the Al-Qaeda is going to attack something like that and destroy our financial system, why weren't they being protected? And I get the feeling that every time that we get one of these alerts, we're like the Keystone Cops running from one place to another trying to protect these places, and there doesn't seem to be any kind of work being done behind the scenes to protect these places.
Well, can you help us here, Larry Johnson? I mean, in fact, New York has been on a heightened state of alert ever since 9/11, hasn't it?
Yeah, there have been steps up there taken behind the scenes. What they're providing now is just the more visible, throwing up the security perimeter and preventing vehicles from coming in there. I think it's important to note that with this threat information, it's still not clear. Even though they did casing of these places, they still didn't specify whether they were going to attack them with car bombs, truck bombs, or use some sort of chemical to inject through the air conditioning ventilation system. So there was no method of attack proposed. They just had identified a potential target.
Linda, do you feel that nothing is being done behind the scenes, or do you feel that in the nature of these things, we will never know what's being done behind the scenes? After all, what we know is what they tell us.
Exactly. And at times when I get these alerts, I feel as if nothing is being done. And then all of a sudden, everything kicks into high gear. And I would like to know that things are being done. I don't know, need to know necessarily the specifics, but I would like to know.
You want to know more than is being said, do you?
Yes.
What kind of information, then, do you think is realistic for us to expect the government to give us that they're not already giving us?
Well, I would like to know that, for example, I didn't know what sort of security was already being done for the financial centers. In Mike Moore's movie, he talked about the state policeman out in Oregon, I believe, who said he never got a manual or anything to help him with terrorism. And these are these seem like gaps in our security. And as somebody who isn't hooked into anybody who knows all this stuff, I would like to know more about it.
But Lawrence Wright, we get into very difficult territory here, don't we? Because of course, whatever the administration tells us, it also tells potential attackers. They presumably monitor very carefully what the government says and what the government does.
Well, that's true, and maybe that's not all bad either, because if they are planning something that we can't exactly prevent, we can scare them off of it. I suppose that's part of the theory of why they make those disclosures. I'm more worried about things that we don't know. For instance, the Madrid bombing, nobody overheard any chatter having to do with that. It was a group that was completely, even though, as Larry points out, you know, they were not experts in explosive, yet they accomplished this rather difficult task. And nobody, even though they were known to the police, they weren't known to be planning this huge operation. So those kinds of things concern me more than the kinds of things that are coming out right now from the Homeland Security Department.
Bottom line question, Larry Johnson, very briefly. Do we now know more than we did know about how these people operate?
Oh, absolutely. And so that's where we need to focus on finding them, killing them, or putting them in jail.
Thanks for that. Larry Johnson, former Deputy Director in the Office of Counterterrorism at the State Department under both Presidents George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton. Lawrence Wright, staff writer at The New Yorker magazine. His recent piece, The Terror Web, appears in the August 2nd issue of New Yorker. And earlier in the program, we spoke with David Heyman, Director of the Homeland Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection.